So warmly invited to participate in our activities, and we look forward to getting to know you better. At this time, I'd like to introduce our guest speaker for today. Reverend Rebecca Bajor has served UU congregations and interfaith social justice communities in Southern California since 2010. Reverend Bajor was born in Tokyo and grew up in Japan, suburban Maryland, and India. She holds degrees from Yale College and the Harvard Divinity Schools and lives in Santa Monica with her husband and three children. She works with CLU, which is Clergy and Laity United for Economic Justice, to educate, organize, and mobilize faith communities to accompany workers, immigrants, and their families in the struggle for dignity, good jobs, and justice. And in that spirit, I now invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially if it's someone you're not too familiar with.
My name is Christine Araoka. I am the accompanist here at UUCF. Ooh, lively morning. I hope you're having a wonderful start to your day. For our opening hymn, we will be singing hymn number 1000, Morning Has Come. Please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.
This morning are by Robert French Levens. Holy and beautiful the custom which brings us together in the presence of the Most High to face our ideals, to remember our loved ones in absence, to give thanks, to make confession, to offer forgiveness, to be enlightened, to be strengthened. Through this quiet hour breathes the worship of ages, the cathedral music of history. Three unseen guests attend, faith, hope, and love. Let all our hearts prepare them place. At this time, I'd like to invite Wendy Karn to come forward to light the chalice. As Wendy lights the chalice, please join me in saying our unison affirmation. This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment. Love is the doctrine that we share. The quest of truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom. Thus we need, thus do we covenant with one another. Okay. Kathy Boone, she has an announcement for us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's auction time again. So, as you can see, we've been asking you to save the date, which will be Saturday, February 22nd, right here in the Social Hall. The theme for this year is Hindsight is 2020. It will be a retrospective of the themes of the last past decade of auctions, and we're going to sneak 2009 in there as well. For those of you who are kind of new to us, our service auction is a really big fun event that we have every year that's also a fundraiser to support our congregation. So, and it's a fundraiser and an event. So the event part is, as I said, we'll gather here. We'll have barbecue from Blake's for dinner as usual. The bar this year will feature a highlighted cocktail and some of the beers and wines that we've served over the past 10 years for you guys to enjoy. And then the other part is donations and fundraising. The fundraiser is mostly supported by you guys. People donate items, services, and host events throughout the year. And everybody comes and bids for places. If you're not familiar, if you haven't attended an event before, you can ask pretty much anybody here. They're a lot of fun and an adventure, and it's a great way to get to know some of our congregants. For those of you who would like to be hosting this year, for some of you who have hosted through the years, and you know who you are, consider maybe bringing back something that you've done before that was really successful or particularly fun or memorable for some other reason. I'll be in the back after service, and one of the things I have is a copy of all of the catalogs from all those years. So you can remind yourself of what you did, or you can get ideas. You can steal somebody else's idea. We don't care around here. That's fine. This year, the donations are going to be done a little bit differently than the past few years. If you are on the church email list, you'll be receiving an email this week that'll have an information flyer with lots of information about the auction, and it will have a link to the donation page that will take you to the online form, and you'll fill that out. That part is exactly the same as it's been in the past. It's just going to go through the email and not through the website this year. If you are new to us and you're not on the email list, please see me afterwards. I have some information flyers for you, and we can figure out how to get you hooked up with the form if you'd like to donate something. And finally, it's a lot of work, and I have lots of jobs, big jobs, small, before the auction, on the day of the auction. If you would like to help me out in any way, please see me at the table after service, and I look forward to seeing all you guys and having a really fun and successful auction again this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Now is the time for this month's food collection. Each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide for those in need. This month's food collection is pancake mix. We invite the children to come up front and remain seated for time of all ages.
Good morning, everyone. I am so glad to be with you all. I'm so glad to be with you all. And I want to reassure you that the story I'm going to share with you, which is called The Everything Seed, is really good even if you can't see any of the pictures, which might be what takes place for some of you who are seated out here. But you'll still be able to hear the beautiful words of this story. And if you would like to come a little closer so you can see the pictures, please come forward and be very welcome up here with us. I know it is counterintuitive to do that. I see some greetings are still happening back here. That's wonderful. All right. So I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to make sure you all see the pictures, and I'll try to give you guys some of that, too. This is called The Everything Seed, and it's by Carol Martin Nacho and illustrated by Joy Troyer. Have you ever watched a seed grow? Have you ever noticed how it begins so small, so still, so quiet, like a gift waiting to be opened? And how slowly it wakes up and begins to unfold, growing into something bigger and larger and larger. And then you know that whatever comes from a seed usually ends up looking very little like the seed it came from, which is also true of the very first seed. Once, long, long, long ago, way back before the beginning, so long ago that there was no such thing as time because there was no one there to count it. Everywhere was a huge, deep, mysterious place, like something waiting to happen. There were no stars, no sun, no moon. There was no place like Earth. Not a drop of water, a single tree or a rock or a flower. There were no living beings anywhere. But in that deep waiting space was hidden the tiniest point of something no bigger than a seed. It was not a flower seed. It was not an oak tree seed. It was not a seed of corn. Although all those things were included in the seed, you might call it an everything seed, because that is what it became. No one knows where that first seed came from, or how it was planted, or how it knew in the way that only seeds seem to know how long to wait for just the right moment to sprout and grow. But all at once, this tiny seed, cradled and nourished in the rich soil of space, woke up, broke open, and began to unfold. Unfolding. Unfolding. And blossoming forth. Into an enormous blazing ball of bright light. It was like a great grandmother sun. And the universe was born. Out fluttered the galaxies like a storm of snowflakes swirling and gathering into the brightest, most blindingly beautiful clouds of stars. And out of those star clouds swirled our own star, the one we call the sun, and our Earth, and our moon, and all the round spinning planets that we have learned how to name. And this is the secret of that tiny seed. You and I were there at the very beginning. For just as the idea for each leaf on a big oak tree lies hidden inside an acorn, we were all there. With all the stars and planets, all the rocks and oceans, plants and animals and people, everything that is now, ever was or ever will be, was inside that very first tiny seed. So, whenever you hold a seed in your hand and wonder how it could become, what it could become, Imagine how you and all that is here once came from the tiniest speck of an everything seed, before it sprouted and grew long, long ago in the way back beginning of time. Now, if this were an ordinary story, it would end right there. But this story of the universe keeps unfolding. What once began in a blazing blossom of light continues every day. New stars sprout open in the deep soil of space. New plants and animals appear on the earth. Seeds of many kinds are scattered everywhere. To help us remember. And new people are born every day with the spark of that first light still alive and burning deep inside, just waiting. Waiting like everything seed to shine in ways that are yet to be known. So that is the end of our story. But if you are like me, then you talk with your friends and your families and your neighbors about everything that we're talking about here in this congregation. And I hope that in this new year, as you are sharing with the people in your life, that you might ask them to share a little bit about the beginning of things and what it feels like to start something new, and ask them how they feel about a world that is still unfolding and still yet to be known. And let them know about this story that you heard and see what they have to say about this story and how it says that everything started. So thank you so much for welcoming me today, and I think we're going to sing you to your classes.
This is the time for, I'm coming through. This is the time for sharing joys and sorrows. Please come forward if you wish to share a brief personal joy or sorrow.
Hi, my name is Pat Smith, and I had the pleasure to be at my granddaughter's wedding in Canada, but it was a little different wedding. It was on January 1st, 2020, and the wedding was in the snow. So if any of you would like to see some photographs of it, I can share them later with you.
Good morning, Debbie Longenbacher, and I have a bit of joy to offer everybody next Saturday morning when we gather to go to the Women's March. In your announcements, it says we're meeting at 7:30 for the carpools in the upper parking lot. That's when I thought the march started at 9 o'clock. But since it starts at 10 o'clock, you all get an extra hour to sleep in, enjoy your coffee, whatever, and we will meet at 8:30 in the upper parking lot and arrange carpools, for which you can sign up today at the social action table and also make a poster to carry during the march. So thank you.
And of course, there are many joys and sorrows out. Oh, I'm sorry. Shh.
Hi, I just wanted to share that we had our first family circle supper of the year, and it was so full and so wonderful to catch up with all the families. If anyone would like to join us, we're still taking people to come enjoy suppers with us.
Of course, there are some joys and sorrows out there that people are still celebrating or holding on to personally, and all of our thoughts are with you as well. This one I'm going to need your folks' help with. This reading is Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. All that stuff in the bold, I'm going to need you folks to say that back to me, all right? You do not have to be good.
You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert for pain.
You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine.
Meanwhile, the world goes on.
Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes.
Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clear blue air, are heading home again.
Wherever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things.
Let us be together in a moment of silent meditation. Peace be with us and with all under the sun.
Our reading this morning is a poem by Joanna Klink. It was originally published in February of 2017. We woke to the darkness before our eyes, unable to take the measure of the loss. Who are they? What are we? What have we abandoned to arrive with such violence at this hour? In answer, we drew back, covered our ears with our hands to the heedless victory, or vowed, as I did, into the changed air, never to consent. But it was already too late for the unfarmed fields, the men by the station, the park swings, the parking lots, the groundwater, the doves, too late for dusk falling in summer, chains of glass lakes mingled into dawn, the corals, the neighbors, the first drizzle on an empty street, cafeterias and stockyards, young men asking twice a day for work. Too late for hope. Too far along to meet a country, a people, its annihilating need. Because the year is new and the great change already underway, we concede a thousandfold and feel, harder than the land itself, a complicity for everything we did not see or comprehend. Cynicism born of raw despair, long cultivated hatreds, the promises of leaders traveling like cool silence through the dark. My life is here in this small room, and like you, I am waiting to know. But there is no time to wait for what has happened. What does the future ask of me? Those who won't have enough to eat by evening, those whose disease will now take hold, and the decades that carried past me once I've died, generations of children, the suffering that is never solved, the heat over the earth, its marches, its crowded towers, its unbreathable night air. I would open my hand from the wrist, step outside, not lose nerve. Here is the day, still to be lived. We do not fully know what we do, but the trains depart from the stations, traffic lurches and stalls, a highway crew has paused. Desert sun softens the first color of the rock. Who governs now, governs by grievance and old scores, but we compass our worth. Prepare to do the work not our own, and feel past the scorn in his eyes the burden in the torso of a stranger. Draw close to the sick, the weak, the women without jobs, the 12-year-old facing spite half-tangled into sleep, the panic tightening inside everyone who has been told to go. I will help you, although I do not know you, and strive not to look away. Be unwilling to profit, an ache inside that endless effort, a slowed down summons not from those whose rage is lit by greed. We do not consent. But the ones who wake without prospect, those who don't speak, can't recover. Like the old woman at the counter, the helpless father who, like you, gets no more than his one life. Here ends our reading. And I'm going to go grab my water, but I'll be right back. I knew I would do that. I knew I would leave it over there. I am so glad to be with you all this morning. I want to thank Reverend Jason for extending the invitation and also for being able to see your sanctuary. I came to a CLUE meeting here probably about 2 years ago, and it was such a delight to be in this space with so many of you who have supported CLUE and all of the work that we do for economic justice. And now I am just really delighted to be with you in your worship space and in your sanctuary. So thank you. Last year, my family and I were in Pershing Square for the Women's March. How many folks have been on a Women's March? Yeah, I thought so. One of the signs that caught my attention last year read, "You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles across the desert repenting. You have only to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. And my heart was caught by that sign, because the author of those words, which you so beautifully brought into our space together this morning, is of course the poet Mary Oliver, who died a year ago on Friday. And she had died in the days before the march last year, and she died on January 17th in Hobie Sound, Florida, which is 3,452 miles away from the woman who was holding the sign with these words on it. If you are like me, you are familiar with the image of the new year, beginning with blank pages and with empty space as yet unfilled. You might even imagine an elderly person, maybe a white man with a long white beard, who is headed off stage, the old year's passing, and a new soft-skinned baby, also probably white and pink and light-haired, who's bouncing into view. Maybe the new year is the ball drop in New York City. It's confetti and a kiss and an old song. And even as we shift toward what is yet to come, we are surrounding ourselves with everything we did last time, with what came before. And haven't we been here before? Haven't we done this before? Haven't we heard this poem before, the Wild Geese poem? Is there really newness in the new year? In this time, I know you may be hearing this familiarity as a weary one. Maybe it sounds like a complaint or a lament or a cynical comment on our cyclical calendar. But before you spiral down that path, I want to say I mean it like this, that this new beginning is both new and also has the seed of everything that came before still inside it. It's a living tradition, if you will, which is endlessly alive and yet to be known and unfolding. And here's how my Methodist colleague put it when he shared these verses from the Christian Bible at our staff meeting on Monday. En el principio creó Dios los cielos y la tierra. Y la tierra estaba sin orden y vacía, y las tinieblas estaban sobre la faz del abismo. Y el Espíritu de Dios se movía sobre la faz de las aguas. Y dijo Dios, sea la luz, y fue la luz. In the beginning, goes this version of the story, God created heaven's earth. But there was already something else there too. There was darkness and waters and spirit moving. From the beginning, there was already all those things. What we might say in our Unitarian Universalist tradition, the seed of everything. But here in Southern California, we know we can celebrate the new year in almost every season. Whether we are doing so as a guest or a host, we begin with that secular new year that turned 2019 into 2020. And may it be a year of perfect vision. And continue with the lunar new year that is moving us from the pig to the rat. And may that not be a prediction for how our presidential election will turn out. And after that, you can walk right into spring with our Persian communities, and we wish them and all of us peace in these difficult and extraordinary times as they celebrate the festivities of Nowruz with a Hafsin table with seven sibilant symbols that start with S, standing for prosperity and hope and renewal, among them Sabza, the sprouts, as well as add-ons like the Quran and the poems of Hafiz or another book of wisdom, and painted eggs, or a bowl with live goldfish sparkling, moving on the face of the waters. I was introduced to the Hafsin and Nowruz Persian traditions by a beloved congregant who shared her traditions with our congregation in Santa Monica by always setting up the Hafsin Nowruz table in the aisle of our sanctuary, and by never forgetting to bring new money for all the children, and a tradition that is also associated with the red envelopes of the Lunar New Year. I once thought that that wrapped it up, that there were three new years into the new year, but of course I was neglecting our Jewish ancestors with their harvest new year, the birthday of the world in September or so, and I recently learned that Ethiopian communities also celebrate on a calendar set by the Eastern Christian churches with a new year that takes place in September. So you are probably aware of others as well. And this brings me back to beginnings and how they combine both the familiar, the sense that we have been here before, with the unknown promise of what is yet to be and still unfolding. A cause for rejoicing for all of us who know that although our pasts describe us, they do not define us. Although your past may describe you, it does not define you. Mary Oliver put it this way. She wrote, "Every morning the world is created. Under the orange sticks of the sun, the heaped ashes of the night turn into leaves again and fasten themselves to the high branches. And the ponds appear like black cloth on which are painted islands of summer lilies." She wrote, "If it is in your nature to be happy, you will swim along the soft trails for hours, your imagination alighting everywhere. And if your spirit carries within it the thorn that is heavier than lead, if it's all you can do to keep on trudging, there is still somewhere deep within you a beast shouting that the earth is exactly what it wanted. Each pond with its blazing lilies is a prayer, heard and answered lavishly every morning, whether or not you have ever dared to be happy, whether or not you have ever dared to pray." I once believed that Mary Oliver was an unnamed saint of Unitarian Universalism until my Methodist colleagues claimed her as well, which doesn't actually disqualify her, but it does remind me of how our poets travel among our traditions and how our traditions travel among our poets. And critics, of course, have taken Oliver down on Instagram for her solution to every existential human problem, which was a long walk in the woods. And this brings me back to that sign. A year ago at the Women's March, and the woman with her hand-painted sign, what was she doing with those words, with the opening lines of wild geese on the streets of Los Angeles, where the wild creatures tend to rats, not rabbits, pigeons, not peregrine falcons, weeds, not wildflowers? The answer, I believe, lies in the deepest ecology of interdependence. And wasn't that Oliver's true subject? And isn't that what's at the heart of the Women's March? Coming as it does on this weekend, our nation has set aside, somehow, after long activism and through the joy and the pain of struggle, to celebrate and make real the legacy of another leader, surrounded by so many leaders who argued that interdependence, or what it is that tugs us back to the fundamental truth that we are all in this together, is at the heart of our struggle for justice, which is the struggle for equality, which is the struggle for compassion in human relations. Truly, there are not many people in Oliver's poems, and the sunflowers definitely outnumber the sanitation workers. But when the people do show up in her spare and elegant lines, I want you to know they show up enacting and embodying solidarity. The radical premise that the people united will never be defeated. Resurrection and rebirth and cycles of life appear again and again in Oliver's descriptions of her beloved Cape Cod landscapes. And I believe this irrepressible call to kinship, kinship with the natural world, I believe it echoes even now, even here, in these times when so many of us are turning our footsteps no further than the urban concrete jungle that is named, at least in downtown Los Angeles, Flower Street. My spiritual companions, isn't it true that Oliver belongs with us on the march? Not only in the marshes, because it was she who wrote that we all have a place in the family of things. That means not the wealthy or the poor, not the American or the Iraqi or the Iranian, not the 1% or the 99%, but the 100%. That means all of us and the egret too. The reason she keeps calling us back to interdependence is because there is so much countering evidence in the wild and human worlds so many other voices shouting every day that some lives don't matter, that some people can be thrown away, and that the turtle serves no purpose, nor the snowy owl, nor the sunrise, nor this moonlight. But as one of my spiritual teachers said, it is in times like these that we know how much we need each other. How much we need each other and a voice who will tell us a different story. A voice from elsewhere who cries out to us that we compass our worth. Who will argue for the mattering of now and tomorrow and yesterday, for the beauty of the truth, for the way the marchers spreading out across the city streets look a lot like a shouting, joyful, sudden stream, irrepressibly alive and so present in the struggle. You'll remember last year it was our teachers who were marching in the streets in the rain, and I know it is not going to be long before another group of workers will be fighting for fair contracts in this new year, in the weeks and the months to come. And their signs may just have an upraised fist holding a familiar flower. Because the saying goes, we need bread, but we need roses too. Mary Oliver knew that, and so did the marcher who brought her to downtown Los Angeles a year ago, right where she belongs. And this is what I'm saying to you, beloveds, as we share this hour together, which will not come again. Although we have been here before, I'm saying that this new year isn't all only a day or a night or a party or a song. It is a season that begins with a march and a memory that calls us forward into the next unfolding of this experiment in participation and interdependence, this Unitarian Universalist community, this city, this region, this nation, our world. And that is a cause for rejoicing indeed. May we be the ones to make it so.
Our offering is a vital way we show our gratitude for this community. By giving to this community, by giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity.
Closing hymn, we will be singing hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us. Please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.
We extinguished the chalice this morning, but not the light of our food, of our commitment, or the warmth of our community. Didn't see that. The light and truth, we keep those in our hearts until we meet again. So please join hands as we sing, "Go Now in Peace."